evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Thursday, July 4th, 2019. Lawmakers criticize the Speaker of South Sudan's Transitional Legislative Assembly for curtailing their freedom of speech.
What Honorable Anthony Makana have said was a frustration from the critique of Honorable members over the budget. That's why maybe he has been threatened somewhere by the executive not to allow the MPs to speak.
And the ceasefire monitoring body warns the parties are behind on security arrangements again.
The forces will not report to those cantonment sites unless those things are provided. And those things will not be provided unless the parties to the agreement and the well-wishers are serious in funding these activities, because these activities needed money.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Some lawmakers in the Transitional National Legislative Assembly have reacted angrily to a move by a Speaker of the Parliament, Anthony Lino Makana, instructing lawmakers this week not to talk to the media without his permission. The lawmakers say it is their duty to update their voters about what is happening in the country. Winnie Chirino reports for VOA from Juba.
Deroy Mabortain, a lawmaker representing the Rumbe community in the National Legislative Assembly, says Speaker Makana told legislators only the Speaker and the head of the Information and Communications Committee are allowed to speak to the media on issues tabled in Parliament. Tain says he doesn't understand which law or regulation guiding the conduct of business of Parliament permits the Speaker to make such an assertion. Tain believes Makana is angry over certain lawmakers talking to the media about blocking finance and economic planning minister Salvatore Garang from presenting the 2019-2020 fiscal year budget last week.
What Honorable Anthony Makana have said was a frustration from the critique of Honorable members over the budget. That's why maybe he has been threatened somewhere by the executive not to allow the MPs to speak, because we are actually trying to send the truth to the people.
Tain advised the Speaker to amend the Constitution if he doesn't want lawmakers to express themselves.
If you want us not to speak, you should table the Constitution to be amended so that the freedom of expression is stopped. But if the law provides the way, if the law provides the opportunity for the freedom of expression, and also the conduct of business also give us that right as MP of your constituency to actually have opinion or information to the entire public, then you cannot stop us.
David Okwer Akwey, a lawmaker from Pochala constituency, says he understands lawmakers cannot talk publicly about national security issues, but he says lawmakers have every right to speak to the media regarding general concerns affecting constituents.
As a parliamentarian, I have a right, if I have an issue, to go to the media anytime and anywhere, and I give my opinion. That is the responsibility, and every MP has such a responsibility. Responsible to his own constituency.
Paul Johan Bunju, head of the Information and Communication Committee at the Transitional National Legislative Assembly, says some lawmakers misunderstood the Speaker. He quotes the Speaker as saying, "I am advising you, my colleagues, the honorable members of this House, to avoid making statements over the media outlets, particularly on FM radios, so that I can be in position to intervene and protect you in case of anything."
The honorable Speaker was just making a caution. He was not warning the members. After all, the members of Parliament, these are responsible people representing their constituencies, so nobody can warn them. Nobody can stop them from anything, but he was cautioning them that issues that are not disposed by a parliamentary resolution, in his humble opinion, the honorable members should not go and talk about it anyhowly. Unless it is resolved by the House resolution, then you, an honorable member, you can talk about it.
James Cook, a political analyst at the Juba-based Center for Strategic Policy Studies, says the Speaker must have made that order when the lawmakers decided to go against his wishes and blocked the finance minister from presenting his proposed budget.
It's an alarming situation that shouldn't have been, because the freedom of expression is core to the parliamentarian work. Although it differ in opinion with some of these parliamentarians, he cannot restrict their freedom of expression. The best he can do is to invoke disciplinary measures within the system of parliamentary regulation or rule, but not to come to the public and tell the people that the MPs are not allowed to speak in the media.
Okok says the speaker's directive to lawmakers is a dictatorial tendency that affects people's freedom of expression in South Sudan and should be discouraged. In a statement released today, the management of the South Sudan Media Authority, the body which regulates the work of journalists and issues credentials to reporters and media houses operating in the country, condemned any decision that threatens or suppresses freedom of expression in the country. For VOA News, I am Winnie Serino in Juba.
Over 1,000 lawyers from across Africa have sued the governments of South Sudan and Kenya over the abduction, forced disappearance, illegal and arbitrary detention, torture and possible brutal murder of activist and lawyer Dong Samuel Luak and SPLM-IO senior member Agri Idri Isborn. Hope for Humanity Africa, a national NGO registered in South Sudan, and the Pan-African Lawyers Union, a continental forum of African lawyers, are taking the lead in the lawsuit at the East African Court of Justice in Arusha, Tanzania. The court has asked the Attorneys General of Kenya and South Sudan to report within 45 days to answer charges regarding the abduction, forced disappearance, illegal and arbitrary detention, torture and possible murder of Dong Samuel Luak and Agri Idri Isborn. Two groups of lawyers in Juba are wrangling over the leadership of the South Sudan Bar Association. Both sides refer to the other body as an illegal entity. The dispute is the latest setback in efforts to enforce the South Sudan Advocates Act, legislation that was passed into law 6 years ago. One legal expert is urging the two groups to put aside their egos and work out a solution. Wake Simon Wudu has the story for VOA from Juba.
Disagreements between the two bar associations started in May. Things came to a head when one group of advocates decided to establish a parallel leadership for the bar association and pronounced the other group illegitimate. Judge Julius Noel, a South Sudanese advocate and a commissioner of arts, says the dispute between the two groups developed from a failure to formalize the bar association based on the requirements in the 2013 South Sudan Advocate Act.
Ever since people wanted, some lawyers wanted, elections to be conducted, and you might know elections were attempted and it was disrupted. You might have heard that security got involved, ballot boxes were taken away. Something that was very, very embarrassing and that shouldn't have happened because this is a professional body established by lawyers.
The original bar association is run by Advocate James Altape. The new one formed in May is headed by Advocate Issa Muzamel. The two bodies both consider the other organization illegitimate. On Wednesday, Muzamel was arrested and briefly detained in Juba's Munuki police station but later released. He tells South Sudan in Focus the bar association he heads as interim chairman was created in May in accordance with the legal requirements of the Advocates Act.
I happen to be elected by the General Assembly. So from that moment, the outgoing executive have refused to recognize the decision of the General Assembly. And from that time, they have been distancing themselves, claiming that the General Assembly is a different body. For any person who looks at it carefully, the Bar Association is a system. The body that removed them was an organ of the Bar Association called the General Assembly. So it is not true that there are two Bar Associations.
Ajaka Mayol Bior, Secretary General of the South Sudan Bar Association, headed by LTAPE, confirms that Muzamel was arrested following a case of fraud his group filed against him. He says the bar association he runs is illegally constituted, calling it a fictitious entity.
He went as far as establishing another office and he met a different location. The location of South Sudan Bar Association is known, is on the second floor of the old KCB building in Munuki, High Kuwait, opposite Maidan Rembo on Bilfam Road. It is a known office. It has all the assets of the of Bar Association. If at all he has a process he would want to do, the court is ready. Take it to the court.
Noel says the lawyers in both groups must put aside their egos and peacefully talk to each other and work out a deal. He says continuing the dispute degrades the confidence people have in the legal fraternity. If that doesn't happen, Noel says, individuals could ask a court of law to dissolve the two bodies altogether and organize new elections.
At the end, the people must decide who should lead them. It will destroy them if they believe that they can force themselves onto the lawyers. These are educated people, these are professionals, and then they know what to, who should, how they should govern themselves.
The South Sudan Bar Association's members are lawyers whose role in the organization is to maintain and improve the conduct and learning of legal professions. For VOA News, I'm Waki Simon Wudu in Juba.
Still on legal matters, three civil society groups have filed a lawsuit against the governments of Uganda and Rwanda in the East African Court of Justice over the continued border closure. The activists say the closed border between Uganda and Rwanda is causing poverty among citizens of the two countries. The groups want the court to rule on what they say is continued impunity and arbitrary border closure. Catherine Nambi reports for VOA from Kampala.
It is close to 5 months since the Rwanda-Uganda border at Gatuna was closed. Businesses as well as local governments have started feeling the pinch. While some traders have relocated, others have closed shop and resorted to other options to earn a living. Nelson Nsangabasheja is a local chairperson of Katuna Town Council on the Ugandan side of the border.
Because they crossed here in Katuna, businessmen, some they moved to Busia, others went to Southern Sudan, others went to Kampala. So they decided to go and get us businesses. Here our people in Katuna, they decided to go, start digging, such that they can get school fees and other needed in their homes.
The continued closure has prompted three organizations to seek help from the courts. The Eastern African Sub-Regional Advancement of Women, the Southern and Eastern Africa Trade Information and Negotiations Institute, CIATINI, and Center for Food and Adequate Living Rights have filed their case in the East African Regional Court. Shira Kawamala Mishambi is the Executive Director of the Eastern African Sub-Regional Support Initiative for the Advancement of Women, known as ARC. She says their consolidated petition to the East African Court of Justice is backed by 400 statements from affected citizens. She says they want court to issue an injunction against the closure.
A lot of social and emotional distress among the local people, anguish, families have been dislocated, there are deaths happening as a result, and these are some of the things we want to be audited and the people compensated adequately. There has also been losses in terms of the government revenues for the two countries, and when revenue is lost, of course, as citizens, we also lose because services are affected.
Janet Chalsima is from the Center for Food and Adequate Living Rights. She says the closure has not only affected trade, but also caused hunger among many families, especially on the Rwandan side of the border.
Rwanda is food insecure, and the communities at the border were getting food from the Ugandan community, that's Kabale and Chisoro. And since the border was closed, they cannot freely get the food. And this has led to malnutrition and even death. This is really infringing on their right to food.
Uganda's Trade Minister Amelia Chambadde is uncertain on when the border will be reopened. She, however, advises traders to use other border posts or find alternative destinations as Uganda and Rwanda continue negotiations.
The issue of Rwanda I must admit it's a serious one. But we are informed by Rwanda that they're working on the road, Gatuna. That is their story. They had given us 2 weeks to test the road. I don't know. These are technical issues that they use. But we have definitely lost a lot. Koluo, as in trade, how much are we exporting? 204 from $400 million. But Mirama Hills is open, except that there are still some NTPs, some restrictions. But we are negotiating with them. They are our neighbors. We can't run away from that. But I've advised Ugandans also to look for other routes.
The Rwandan government closed the border posts of Gatuna, Katuna, and Chanika in Kabale and Kisoro in February. The Gatuna-Katuna border post has historically been the major crossing point for cargo trucks and cross-border trade, both formal and informal, heading to Rwanda, Burundi, and Democratic Republic of Congo. When the border was closed, the trucks were diverted to the Mirama crossing, which many drivers say is a long route. This is Catherine Nambi for VOA News in Kampala.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, the opposition and transitional military council hold face-to-face talks in the Sudanese capital, Khartoum. Find out more after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
how would you describe a comfortable life?
It's just being free and well in a way you are. Just like if at all someone feels good with only eating lunch or eating local food, not like someone who might be eating chicken. So it depends on what you feel, what you have, what you can accommodate.
I think a comfortable life is that life where you're well off, like financially, you have everything that you need, and when you come to health, your health is good.
I find comfort in being able to meet all my financial needs. That's where I find comfort. If you're able to pay your water bill, you're comfortable. Then on the other side of health, if you're healthy, you don't have any disease, I feel you're comfortable.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. CITESAM, the body monitoring South Sudan's ceasefire, says parties to the revitalized peace deal are behind schedule once again in fulfilling activities required for the formation of a new government in November. The parties were supposed to finish the job in May. The head of CITESAM says 2 months into the extended deadline for completing the pre-transitional activities, the parties are not sending all forces to cantonment sites because they lack food, shelter and medicine. Dimas Silva Aurelio has more for VOA from Juba.
CITESAM and held the 12th meeting of its technical committee today to talk about progress made on implementing the ceasefire agreement. The technical committee consists of senior generals from the parties to the revitalized deal. CITESAM and Chairman Desta Abiche says although the ceasefire is holding across the country, the cantonment of forces is behind schedule.
CITESAM has observed numerous logistic challenges. The provision of food, water, medicine, and shelter from those troops who are already contained and supposed to be contained. CITESAM also observed slow progress of containment movement. We urge the parties and NPC to address those issues as a matter of urgency.
The NPTC, or National Pre-Transitional Committee, oversees implementation of security arrangements and other pre-transitional activities. Abiche says the delays could affect the November deadline for forming a new government.
Without cantonment, the peace agreement cannot be implemented, and we must maintain the momentum towards peace.
Generals representing the opposition say without having basic necessities at the cantonment sites, their forces will not move to the cantonment areas. Major General David Nyang represents the South Sudan Opposition Alliance and is a member of CITESAM.
The forces will not report to those cantonment sites unless those things are provided. And those things will not be provided unless the parties to the agreement and the well-wishers and the major funders are serious in funding these activities because these activities needed money.
Opposition parties also say the government is violating the terms of the deal by blocking access of ceasefire monitors to certain areas, including Awil. And they say soldiers with the Tiger Division, a presidential protection unit within the South Sudan People's Defense Force, continue to occupy civilians' homes, schools, and hospitals in violation of the peace deal. Major General Martin Abocha, who represents the SPLA-IO, says government forces must respect the peace agreement.
I'm grateful, particularly in Central Equatoria and Western Equatoria and Upper Nile. There's significant progress moving out. But to say the least, in Eastern Equatoria, none has happened. And this is particularly locations occupied by the Tiger Division. If the intent is to occupy these facilities and occupy these places, where shall the civilians live?
Article 4 of the ceasefire agreement, which deals with the cessation of hostilities, protection of civilians, and humanitarian access, states that the parties shall not occupy or damage any public or community infrastructure, such as schools, hospitals, or places of worship, and that the parties shall withdraw immediately from any of these sites. Major General Lul Rai Kwong, spokesman of the South Sudan People's Defense Force, acknowledges government forces are still occupying some installations, but says it is up to the country's military leaders to provide a detailed plan on how to vacate the troops.
In June, there were some areas that were clearly marked red. That meant they were supposed to be vacated on the indicated date. What is needed now is a review. For those who are supposed to move out on the 30th, yet they move out. So it would require us to counter-check with the relevant field commanders. The most important thing is that we have vacated some of them, we'll keep on vacating them until all the occupied centers are vacated.
Kwong says the SSPDF occupied certain public buildings in order to protect them from being destroyed during the fighting, but says there is no longer any reason to do so since the ceasefire is holding. Abeche says the parties have until July 15th to vacate all public places. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
From Juba, we move to the Sudanese capital, Khartoum, where protesters and the Alliance for Freedom and Change have resumed talks with the ruling military council last night. The two sides have disagreed for a month over the makeup of a transitional government following the overthrow of long-time President Omar al-Bashir. Farah Agar, chairman of the Blue Nile Forum, an alliance of 14 political parties and three civil society organizations, tells my colleague James Batty, any agreement that will bring about stability in Sudan would be welcome as long as it's inclusive.
There are hanging issues which are not completed in the last round of the negotiations between TMC and FFC regarding the level of the transitional institutions, Supreme Council and the executive body, which is the cabinet, and then the transitional parliament.
Dr. Agar, I hear the protesters are setting conditions for the talks to resume. One condition is that they want political detainees that were arrested from the protest movement to be released and an investigation held.
Yes, TMC declared that they release all the political detainees. This is one. And second, the condition of the TMC, the investigation committee from the national group and not the foreign group.
What do you know, Dr. Agar, because the African Union and Ethiopia have been trying to mediate. So did they put some pressure for these talks to resume?
The African Union and Ethiopia, they brought an initiative. This initiative, the DMC mentioned that there are observations. The observations of the DMC is in the leadership of the Supreme Council. TMC says that TMC has to take the leadership of the Supreme Court permanently until the end of the transitional period. This is one. Second, also, TMC is talking about the inclusive solution that includes the all political parties and the all Sudanese components that participated in creating this revolution. But FFC does not agree that they want only to neglect and to eliminate the others from the participation in the transitional period.
So, Dr. Aga, how likely is it that anything good will come out of the new talks? Do you think the two sides will reach some agreement?
You know, any agreement that can bring the stability to the country, that based on the inclusive solution, give a chance for the different components of the Sudanese community and the different parties that participated in the creation of this revolution to be part of the process, of the political process. Without that, no stability can happen in the country.
That's Farah Agar, chairperson of the Blue Nile Forum, an alliance of 14 political parties. He was speaking with my colleague James Batty from Sudan earlier today. You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Here is a recap of today's top stories with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Damme.
Thanks, John. Some MPs in Juba say the speaker has no right to tell them that they're barred from speaking to the media. Parliament Speaker Anthony Limo Parmarkana ordered lawmakers on Monday to not talk to the media before getting his permission. The MPs say it's their duty to inform their constituents about the work they're doing and that they reach a wider audience through the media. Rumbek lawmaker Darai Mabor Tenney says Marcana told legislators only he himself and the head of the Information Committee can speak to the media on issues tabled in Parliament. Tenney believes Marcana is fuming over the recent lawmaker initiative to block Finance Minister Salvatore Garang from presenting the new fiscal year budget last week. He says the Speaker will need to change the Constitution if he thinks he can stop lawmakers from expressing their views. Juba-based political analyst James Akook called the speaker's directive dictatorial. The body monitoring South Sudan's ceasefire says parties to the peace deal may not finish pre-transitional activities on time, even with the extended November deadline. The head of the body says the parties are not sending their forces to cantonment sites because they lack food, shelter, and medicine. The chairman of the body says although the ceasefire is holding across the country, the cantonment of forces is way behind schedule. The National Pre-Transitional Committee oversees implementation of security arrangements and other pre-transitional activities. And finally, in Sudan, protesters led by the Alliance for Freedom and Change Coalition have resumed talks with the ruling Military Transitional Council. Those talks last night were mediated by the African Union and Ethiopian Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed. The two sides have disagreed for 4 weeks over the makeup of a transitional government following the overthrow of President Bashir. The protesters have set a number of conditions for the resumption of those talks. The talks are scheduled to resume this evening. And that's a look at some of today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Damme.
That's our show for this Thursday, and I will leave you with Vivian singing about peace. Been listening to Vivian singing a peace song in her native Shilluk language. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.